Hey, this is Samus from The Wretched Den, you know, listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, this is Bill Hale, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
You're about to enter a room where there's nothing but a microphone and a bunch of metalheads. Rest assured that these people focus on metal. Today on Focus on Metal.
Brian Slagle, before he did Metal Blade, had his own magazine, and that was like the first one. Quintana had Metal Mania, we had Metal Rendezvous, so that was a lot of information going around all the time.
We talked to author and photographer Bill Hale.
Music-wise, I guess you could say that Cyclone took a slightly different direction. It was a little bit more in your face, at least compared to the latest Emperor album, which was the Prometheus album, which was a very progressive album.
We also talked to multi-instrumentalist Samoth of The Wretched End, better known for his work with Emperor and Cyclone. We bring you a new installment of What Pisses Me Off, as well as our standard segments such as new releases, tour report, and metal birthdays. And now on to some of the news headlines. Tony Iommi is writing new material, but Wendy Dio says Heaven and Hell should carry on under a different name. I'm thinking Black Sabbath here. Sepultura is going to perform the entire album Arise at Sao Paulo concert in Brazil on December 11th. This one is plain brave. Iranian rock metal magazine Divan has put Israeli's progressive folk metalers Orphan Land on the cover of its fourth issue. You can now not only purchase Eric's car's 1980 Porsche 924 given to him as a signing bonus, but also his Crazy Nights drum kit. Those items, as well as many others, can be purchased at kissmuseum.net. How about some tour cancellations? Vital Remains has apologized for canceling the rest of their tour with Cannibal Corpse. Sharon Van Adel of Within Temptation is pregnant with her third child, and that has led to cancellation of the rest of the European tour dates. And Murder Dolls will not be playing with Wednesday 13th, as the entire Violent Night, Deadly Night tour is cancelled.
Horns up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Focus on Metal. On today's episode, all team members of Focus on Metal are going to make an appearance in some way or form. Starting this off as an intro is myself, Dario Psycho, and my friend Mandy De La Muerta. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fine. Today we have, this is the second time I think in the history of, early history of the show, that we're airing not one but two interviews. We have an interview with Bill Hale that Scott and Julian conducted a few days ago. Bill, of course, is a photographer and an author. He's done the Metallica Club Days book, and man, he's been out there since the beginning of times, pretty much. Making photos of bands when nobody even knew about them. Starting with, early 80s West Coast scene. And he pretty much made certain bands really famous.
How awesome would that be? I'm a little jealous of that man.
Well, you should be really jealous of him now as to where he lives.
Hawaii. Oh,
aloha.
Yeah. Aloha, Bill. I'm a great secretary, but I bring my sidekick Dario.
yeah, that's the deal, dude. You want us? You got us both. And the second interview that we're doing today is with Samoth from The Wretched End, better known as he's a member of Emperor, Cyclone, Who else has he played with? Has he been with, did you say Burzum?
He's been with Burzum?
Really?
Oh, yeah. He was with Burzum, yeah.
Guy goes way back to the very early.
He does. So we went from the warm beaches of Hawaii over to the snowy.
To the snowy.
Mountains of, I think, Norway.
It is Norway, yeah.
Are they? Yeah.
We want to thank John of Iron City Rocks for that interview. He made that very exclusive to us. And we were just, you know, fortunate to come up with questions, which mostly was yours. So thank you.
Except for my most burning questions.
Really? Oh, okay. I get it.
Tonight on Focus on Metal, we have the fortunate chance of having a good chat with author and photographer Bill Hale. For those of you who are wondering who the heck is this Bill Hale guy, well, Bill's the real deal. He was back around the original San Francisco scene. He saw it all go down. Has a few years on me, so he really saw the seeds of everything back there, and he photographed it. He hung out with all those people that you wish you could hang out with, you know, as a friend, as a photographer. And he saw the whole birth of heavy metal go down over there on the West Coast. The guy's done photography for, you know, Metal Rendezvous and also the Heavy Rock magazine. He's like one of the first guys that covered bands like Wasp and Armored Saint. And his work's also been in, you know, in Kerrang and just about every other metal magazine you can think of. And pretty much nowadays when you pick up a book about metal, it's a good chance that a lot of photographs in there, they're from Bill Hale. And like I said, Bill Hale, he is the real deal, and he's a great guy to talk to. Talked to him a few months ago, and we were kind of talking about the 30th anniversary of Diamond Head's Lightning to the Nations, and I said, hey, Bill, why don't you come on Focus on Metal and talk about that with us? And he did, and here it is. Hey, Focus on Metalers. Happy to have here tonight the awesome photographer and author Bill Hale, and he's decided to stop by and talk to us about the 30th anniversary of Lightning to the Nations, and so me and Julian are very happy to talk to him. How you doing tonight, Bill?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
We're doing awesome. So, cool. Obviously, I've talked to a lot of people about your past book, Metallica Club Days, and I always recommend that to anybody because that kind of gives that... You know, it isn't the star treatment. It's really gives some really good feeling pictures, and it comes away as a really good book. And I know you got another book coming up on Megadeth.
Yes, I do.
And I assume it's going to take like the same kind of content as Club Days. A lot of your picture archives and things never seen before.
Yeah, it's the earliest parts of Mustaine with Megadeth. For some reason, he only played in San Francisco, even though he was from L.A. So I shot like the first shows with Kerry, but you know somehow that stuff Dave used a lot of stage fog, and that didn't come out. But I, for like 3 or 4 years, I you know always followed Dave around with my camera and stuff. So we got you know before Peace Cells, all that stuff like that with Gar. I did a photo session with Marty Friedman that got him into the band at you know later on in life. But yeah, it's a it's very more personal than the Club Days book. Metallica is more like a camaraderie, everybody's partying, kind of have a good time. And Dave with Megadeth was more as focusing, getting back his metal crown that he thought he lost. It was very, it's very intense, a very somber book. I don't think Dave Mustaine smiled until 1986, really. It was one of those things, it was just him, the band, it was hardly anybody backstage. It was just him working hard to get, you know, back where he belonged.
I'm so looking forward to it. I know I love all the Dave pictures in the prior book, and you know definitely some of those are my favorite out of the book because you know Dave, it's like he doesn't pose. It's just Dave is Dave, and whatever comes out of him is real, and I really like that.
Yeah, Dave and his snarl. The whole thing was sometimes not to catch him snarling, but yeah.
Anyways, we were you know kind of talking about the 30th anniversary of Lightning to the Nations, and I was surprised that pretty much. I mean, it went by and no one said anything about it. And to me, I mean, that's a cornerstone of a lot of the music we listen to today was that album and that band. And I'm just, were you shocked that pretty much nobody did anything about it?
A little bit, knowing how much the metal community lately is into these anniversary dates. I think mainly because there's still a bad taste in people's mouth about you know, their big direction when they changed, I guess, Canterbury or Making Music, whatever that was called. People were disappointed in that album. They thought they should have stayed heavy metal, but I think Sean didn't want to do metal anymore. So there might be some animosity there towards the, you know, writers and stuff. So
yeah, I'm surprised when you think about all the bands that, you know, lifted riffs from them or just were inspired by them, and you would have thought there would have been some impetus there to do something. I mean, I know there was the reissue that came out in 2001, and that's kind of close, but to me, I would think, you know, this is even just ripe for a tribute album or something like that to get put together. I was just really surprised.
That'd be cool. Well, at least, you know, Lars suggested do that song for the Big Four, so I guess some kind of vindication.
Well, they
Lars being Lars backhands him kind of thing and says, you know, it's like an easy song to learn. And
Yeah, definitely. I noticed, you know, even going back and you know, I always liked the album, but when you really start listening to it and comparing it to some things, you're like, Metallica owes them a lot of debt with some of this stuff. You hear Metallica all over that album.
Yeah, in the Bay Area, I talked to some people in L.A., and Diamond, it wasn't that big till later on. The Bay Area people really got into the new wave of British heavy metal, and Diamond Head was one of those cornerstone bands, along with, you know, Maiden and Tigers and Pantang. But when, you know, Metallica came up, played their first show there, they had basically did all their shows covers, and you know, it was a lot of Diamond Head stuff, and I think the Bay Area headbangers really got into that because they knew that, you know, all this stuff by heart. So yeah, when they sang "Am I Evil," that was great, and you know, they did the opening riff to the Prince, you know, that was another thing too. So it's like, I think that really helped. It really helped Metallica get into the Bay Area scene that much faster.
Now, do you think back then there were like a lot more bands that were playing stuff off of this album on the West Coast?
It basically was a San Francisco thing, because I know L.A. bands were totally different, doing totally different things. There wasn't much cover tunes, but the talk amongst the bands and the fans and everybody else was about the new wave of British heavy metal. And, you know, it was a lot of original music, but, you know, yeah, they integrated a lot of the elements of that album, a lot of Motorhead type of thingies, and strange enough, a lot of Thin Lizzy riffs here and there, but it was mainly original music, but still the attitude was there. The bands, you know, you had to know these bands to be cool. And, right, you know, Diamond was on top of that list.
Yeah, because it wasn't, for some reason, a lot of those bands were, I think, a lot bigger in your scene than they were here on the East Coast. I remember putting these, you know, logos on my notebook and stuff, and people, like, had no idea who these bands were at all. You know, until you started to have, like, when Def Leppard's first tour came through, and they actually toured with Blackfoot.
Yeah.
If you can believe that. And that's when people started to listen to some of these other bands, when they kind of liked, you know, that first initial album from them, back when they kind of were a more of a metal band.
But, it's kind of... One of the things over here is we had three or four fanzines that just, you know, helped the whole thing. Brian Slagle, before he did Metal Blade, had his own magazine, and that was like the first one. Quintana had Metal Mania, we had Metal Rendezvous, so that was a lot of information going around all the time. And like I said, you had to know these bands to be cool. You know, you had to know who Uli Roth was. You had to know, you know, not just an ordinary stuff, but you had to know all the new stuff and all the stuff going on, you know. And then before Kerrang came out, it was like all about sounds, all about New Music Express, all about Melody Maker. We'd go to the record stores and see what's happening. And actually, in fact, my editor, John Sternansky, actually read the ad in Sounds, and he ordered this LP from the band. I think it was $20, and he just sent it to the band, and I thought he was crazy for this much money. And like 4 months later, he got the album. It was the white cover album with the autographs. And then that was like, that's cool, but, you know. But we all bought the singles, we bought the EPs. I remember buying Diamond Lights EP and stuff. And yeah, we all knew the songs. That was, you know, I think those songs really lent themselves to the Bay Area scene more than anything else. Yeah. You know, it was like a lot of Motorhead and stuff, but we hated LA. You know. And I think the only band that got to go back and forth from L.A. to San Francisco was Y&T. They were like California's band. But otherwise, you know, not people, you know, we didn't really like too many L.A. people because they were all posers and stuff. And so, but that was cool.
Yeah. So Stred had an autographed version of the White Album.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Stred was along with, John Quinneras and Brian Slagle and Lars, he was like one of those metalheads that went and found everything. I remember when Metallica finally moved to the Bay Area and they needed money, John would negotiate with Lars for his collection. I remember they haggled for like a day over the Parallax EP, which is really not that good of an album, but it was super rare. And so I don't remember the dollar amount, but they would haggle over this all the time. And, you know, those two kids were like metalheads. I mean, supreme. They would know what's happening before it happened. And they would pull up obscure stuff like, hey, did you have that Don Watcher single or that Ogzom, whatever that band was? You know, they were just crazy.
Yeah, I kind of get that sense of that. And I was fortunate here that I was like one of the few people that was actually going around getting these. So I was able to get stuff long before people would figure out, oh, I want to go see this band and, you know, get this album. There was pretty much only, you know, you go into Boston and there was a place up in Nashua, and then there was like one other little record store you could go to and get stuff. And, you know, if you're willing to pay the $30 for it, it was it was worth it.
Yeah. And we, you know, in the Bay Area, we had some really good record shops. Of course, the Record Vault. But in Walnut Creek, we had the Record Exchange. We had Rasputin's, which was in Berkeley. They're really always getting imports. And then even Tower Records, the one in Campbell, which is outside of San Jose, was really, really good. And in my hometown, we had two record stops. And, you know, we would bug these guys all the time. Could you get this? Do you find this? You know? Yeah. And then we got to the point we know the distributors, like for Green World, people like that. We'd call the distributors directly, trying to get, you know, albums from them and stuff.
Of course, the $50 question is off of that, off of Lightning. What do you think was your favorite song off of that album?
Actually, they're all good.
They are.
I think I've seen every song except for one covered. I mean, I saw a band do Shoot Out the Lights, even, you know. Am I Evil, probably, right? The Prince.
Yeah.
You know, those are great songs. Am I evil? Yes, I am. Am I evil? I am man. Yes, I am. The only album, I think, for me that rivals that album in the authentic British fashion is it's on top of my head. I forgot the guy. Sorry about that. I just had a brain fart. Holocaust, The Nightcomers.
Ah, okay.
That's the only other album I really think that has that still authentic British New Wave feel. Kind of, I still can play that album to this day.
Yeah.
That, you know, I hear Dimehead all the time. So it's on my iTunes. It flips around. It's like, wow, here's that song. And of course, he's always on Metallica somehow. I got, you know, tons of Metallica bootlegs going on all the time. They're always doing that stuff. But yeah, Am I Evil, probably.
Yeah.
Because that kind of summed up. I mean, just the words alone was kind of shocking back when we were kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was half the fun, right? Was what they were singing about.
Yeah. 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 And, you know,
I'm kind of partial to the Prince myself. I think it's got a little bit of that UFO sound to it.
Yeah.
It's got the classic intro, and yeah, I kind of like that one probably as my favorite. And
bringing that up, Diamond had that cosmetic mode where everybody worshiped this blonde lead guitar. First it was like, you know, Michael Schenker with his Flying V, right? Then it was KK Downing his Flying V. Then Wolf Hoffman was Flying V. And then Brian came along with his Flying V blonde hair. And those were like the guard. Somehow that was the guitar god pose kind of thing.
Sure.
And then, of course, James Hetfield, you know, copied that one.
Well, I never even thought about it that way. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, you know, being a photographer, you always see these coincidences and sequences. And that was like, and walking into the Metallica house up in San Francisco, you know, you have these photographs on the wall, the posters, you know, Schenker and his Flying V, and there's KK Downing and Flying V, and Wolf Hoffman and stuff. And it's like, it fit right in that mode.
Yeah.
And so.
And I think one of the things you probably like, Jay, is you like the fact that, and I agree with you, that it doesn't sound polished.
Not at all.
That's one of the best things about these albums, is they're not sterile. They're just, I mean, some of these songs are a little bit, like the guitars are a little out of tune or they're not meshed. And I think that's part of, like, the appeal of it, is that it just almost has that live sound to it.
It sounds like a garage band that went in and just belted it out, and, you know, there they are, and it's good stuff.
Right.
Yeah. But that's what they were, right?
Yeah,
that was,
pretty much, yeah.
They toured a lot, but they didn't have that much money to go. I mean, I think Lightning was really produced on a shoestring budget. I think they didn't do more than like 2 or 3 days. And even because the first album cover was one of their I think Sean's mother managed the band, and they had a second manager, and he owned a cardboard factory.
Right,
and
Rich Fellows. Yeah,
Yeah, and so that's why the first album came out with just the white cover on it. Yeah. And so it was very shoestringy, yeah. But that was the best thing about the new age British hair metal. It was that raw kind of just get in the studio and do it, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's it. I mean, you've got in a lot of those singles from those bands that you really never heard from again, they all had hand-drawn covers, and that's half the thing. It's got that kind of DIY ethic, but a lot of the stuff was really good. You know, there was definitely some crap in there, too.
Yeah, and you know, a couple of things that really probably didn't do the band justice. One, they never toured here.
Yep.
We thought once they signed with our MCA, well, we might get a tour, but they never really did. You know, I don't know if they toured the East Coast, but I know they didn't come over here whatsoever.
Yeah, we didn't get anything.
Yeah, and then the other thing is they signed with MCA, and you're right there. It's like a kiss of death. You know.
Yep.
That was one of those labels you didn't get signed to, only last effort kind of thing. So. Yeah, who knew if they got a better deal, if they went the Elektra or they went to Capitol or one of the CBS labels, and they would have been a bigger band.
Right, you know? Or even if they'd gotten, you know, somebody like a Smallwood to manage him instead of Sean Harris's mother.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of that.
She was holding out for a bigger deal, and they didn't do a lot of touring in that little time period.
Yeah.
And it hurt the band a lot. I mean, it was a great band. Brian's a great songwriter and stuff, and they never... You know, caught the even though they're touring again today and they're doing stuff still, they never, you know, you can't go back and, you know, reestablish some of those contacts.
Right. Yeah. But it's just disappointing because I listen to this and this is, I mean, Lightning, that's the blueprint of anything with New Album, you know? It's got the galloping bass, it's got the singer comes in with that kind of that choral thing coming in. I mean, it's got every single element that's classic new wave of British heavy metal all in that one song. And I think the whole album itself is just full of all of that stuff that everybody else afterwards kind of took from them.
Yeah, especially the American bands.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know some of it too, because it was a lot of riffs in there. So it's just like I'll take this riff and I'll take that riff. And I mean, I do hear a lot of little other things in their band in that album, like Electric. It kind of gives me a little this like a Alice Cooper meets T Rex kind of feel on that. So you've got American and British kind of pop rock in there a little bit, but you know that's I kind of hear a little of that. But other stuff, it's just amazing how much of what we consider as that sound is all packed into this one album by this one band.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that, you know, that was the whole time period, too. It was just that mind-blowing stuff going on left and right.
Yeah. And just the scene, too. I think probably you might have a better feel about it, but kind of that whole scene in England is kind of had that same kind of vibe as what they had over in England, too, with these bands that, you know, in San Francisco, you had a lot of bands that were working together, were friends with each other, and it was like a group, and I think a lot of that happened over in England, too, where there was a little group of people.
Oh, well, what I've heard, it was way more competitive. Some bands would actually slash bands' tires so they wouldn't get the gig, and they'd show up, hey, I can play for you.
Oh, there was that, absolutely. Yeah. Right, yeah.
But in that little place called England or UK, whatever you want to call it, there's so many things going on, and if you really stop and think about it, like 79, 80, 81, you had all these 60s bands like the Stones and Status Quo doing things still. You had Sabbath doing things still. You still had, you know, some of the 70s bands doing things. And plus you had all the new wave and punk rock and all that that stuff. It was just so much music going on in that little area.
Yeah.
It's just, it's still mind-blowing to think, you know, how many albums came out in that little time period between 79, 80, 81.
Yeah. And then the venues, too, that they were playing in, yeah. if you think about yeah. it. Because, I mean, you guys had at least some, even though you had some kind of more underground small clubs, but it was, you know, these venues that attracted people that wanted to hear that music. But
yeah.
sometimes they were playing in just, you know, the pub around the corner. And they had, you know, guys that just got off an 8-hour shift that they didn't want to hear any of that. And they still went out and pummeled them with the music. And that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, we had, and even though they're a small club, they're run by Bill Graham had, like, the old Waldorf. That was the main small club. And then the Keystone family, which had three, you know, clubs in, you know, San Francisco, Berkeley, and Palo Alto. The club scenes were there for a long time already. And it was just natural that the kids would come in and, you know, take over. The next scene would take over.
Yeah.
And plus, like I said, we had the press already. And so that was just, and with the you know, record stores, the whole thing was conducive for a very good, healthy atmosphere. And yeah. same thing in England. It was, you know, where you would have to, you said you'd have to go find stuff. We had it there.
Yeah.
You know,
and even the club scene around here, you know, it was pretty much in that time period. And for some clubs still today, it's a lot of that LA type pay to play.
Yeah.
You know, which isn't, it just doesn't make a good scene to have to do that. There's, you know, you need something that's organic, like what you guys happened in San Francisco.
Yeah, it was very, you know, but, you know, you had the fans, you had, like I said, you had all the elements to, you know, very conducive for a scene going on, you know, it's still very healthy today, even though there's a different bands coming in left or right, but there's still a lot of bands playing. So that's
right. And that's what, you know, the same thing here is, it is now that's, it's still this scene of there's very few live clubs and still it's they kind of put you through the ringer to play there. You know, I work with a lot of young bands and that's what they go through is they'll, you know, they're going to play that crap night. And then you got the guy saying, well, you didn't bring 200 people in on a, you know, on a Wednesday night, you know, you can't play again kind of thing. And it just doesn't work out well for a lot of these up and coming bands. And they don't get the experience that they really need to actually make something decent out of it.
Yeah. Because you really need to play a lot.
You do.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have that variety. You got to have it under your belt. See what works, what doesn't work, and, you know, rearranging songs and all of that. And I think even just in general, a lot of bands in the country don't really get that either. Or they'll put something together in their home studio. They put it on YouTube and they try to generate buzz that way. But they really can't perform live a lot of times. They don't have that under their belt. Where I can remember, you know, we'd play and, I mean, you remember playing at some crappy clubs, right?
We didn't pack the house, did
no,
we?
No, we didn't pack the house. But yeah, it was, you know, it does get pretty, it would get pretty bad. I can remember, you know, Jay and I showing up for a show.
Oh, the Underground.
Yeah,
oh,
the Underground. God. We were supposed to open for, who was it?
Strange Rex, wasn't it?
No, we were supposed to open for Quiet Riot. We had a Quiet Riot gig, and we showed up, and then ended up that the booking agent was basically told to leave the club. He took all the bookings with them. So we show up, and it's like, okay, you guys are headlining. And then what was worse is there was these poor band that came from Vermont, and they came down, and they were, like, opening for pretty much nobodies. So it really sucked for them. I mean, that's what the scene is like, though, is around here, is a lot of times you get one booking agent with connections, and he gets the big salary and books the better bands, and you get some good slots, and everybody else kind of takes the dregs.
Well, around here also, I mean, I don't go out a lot like I used to, but yeah. I never hear bands doing originals anymore.
Yeah.
You know, every band that, I mean, we're going to see a couple of bands next weekend, two different bands we're going to see, excellent musicians, but it's all cover.
Yeah.
Because that's what people want to hear. You know, no one wants to hear a new song that they don't know about. At least I get that feel from the clubs I go to around here now, but
yeah.
I don't know if that still holds true everywhere, but, you know, hearing new music from, original music from a band, I don't think you get that anymore.
Yeah, it's totally different over here.
Yeah, well, probably, I could just be wrong. Maybe I'm just not going to the right places around here. You know, I'm sure there's places, if I look for it, I probably can find it. It's just when you go to a normal kind of nightclub that people all go to, it's, you don't hear the new music.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, that's like the norm for most places, but... Mm. But, you know, it's up to the bands, too. They can say, look, it's my song here. Listen to it. And you'll like it. Well, you know, drink some more or something.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, we would do pretty much.
Yeah, we have a big metal scene. We have a big everything scene here. I mean, it's a small island, but there's tons of stuff going on. And a lot of little clubs here and there. And, you know, It's a mixture. Some play covers, some play originals, and it's like all this other music going on left and right all the time. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. But that's good. I mean, you know, to do that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, because I'd love to be able to do that. Then.
Well, we always mix it up. We always played probably 50-50, actually. We were probably pretty close to 50-50. And most people, I mean, they enjoyed all of it. So
yeah.
I think we're lucky in that way.
Yeah. I think we beat the crap out of Lightning. I'm just disappointed that nobody did anything. That's my big thing. I can't believe that it's passed by. It's like, what?
Well, you're doing it now.
You know,
so.
Bill and I are the only ones that are going to commemorate this.
maybe we should do it, Scott.
Hey, we could put this on Focus on Metal. Yeah.
We could.
All right. Awesome. I really appreciate you calling in, Bill, and talking about this. I hope that when the next book comes out, you'd be willing to come on again and talk to us about that.
Certainly, yeah, for sure. We'll get more in detail about, you know, Megadeth and stuff like that. You know, and speaking about Megadeth, Dave actually produced an album for Diamondhead, didn't he?
Did he?
Which
yeah. Album? Where's my book at here? I have
Heavy
Metal Guide. Hold on, give me a second.
If Stred was here, he would have known the album, probably the number on it.
Well, you know, I have Stred's record index. Hey, John, what's up, man? And this thing doesn't leave my side. It's one of those, and it's a couple years old. I'm waiting for my new one, Stransky, whenever. Maybe I'm wrong. I thought he did. I know he was on a couple of songs.
Wait, Dave Mustaine produced...
It was Death in Progress.
Oh, okay. Another one.
Yeah, and I think Dave... actually was on a song with Antonio and was on another song. So, there you go.
Didn't Dave Mustaine produce Sanctuary?
Yes, he did.
Okay, I remember that one.
Yeah. Well, getting back to it, if they did some things differently, they would have been a bigger band.
I think so.
They've been up there with, Iron Maidens and Def Leppards and Tigers of Pantang probably thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think they would have been a perfect fit, like a Bill with Saxon or something like that. They would have been huge.
Yeah. It just, you know, not everybody can have the right deals. Not everybody can have the right breaks and stuff like that. I mean, look at Metallica, you know, they started in 81, they got signed by 82, about 83, right. You know, and it was like, they came to San Francisco the first time I saw them, and it was with like 9 months, they got signed already, you know?
Right.
And, you know, it's a Johnny Z's label, of course, which wasn't labeled anyway, but that's what they did. They took over, like, you know, gangbusters, and they had, and Lars always knew who to work with, kind of thing.
I think that's part of it, is Lars really did push that and get those tapes out, and really, you know, he was definitely an insider and not somebody who was like a poser trying to break in. He was really, I think, part of the scene, and it helped them.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, I mean, Steve Harris just happened to have the right vision all the time. How many people did they go through before they had a solid lineup?
Absolutely.
You know, and it was way into like the fourth or fifth album, right? And they got rid of one person after another.
Right, and I mean, how many people would have, you know, decided to get rid of a guitarist like Dennis Stratton? I mean, he was great, but to recognize he's great, but he's not what we need. And I mean, that was a hard decision, but they did it.
And one after another, right? Then Clive went, you know, and then Deanna went, and that was a big one,
huge.
Yeah, and so, you know, there you go.
Yep, and just being, and they, I mean, they definitely had balls, too, to, like, walk in and, you know, hand that tape off and say, hey, you know, play this, and and make that buzz for themselves.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, and so I think Diamond was a little more laid back. In their attitude and stuff, even though they're great songwriters, I think their whole attitude towards the business was more casual. They thought it was going to happen anyway for them, and you have to make it happen. You just can't like wait around.
Yeah. It's a shame. It really is.
Yeah.
And you know, and I can't blame Brian for kind of feeling the way he feels about things now too, after sort of reunions and back and forth, and just kind of being burned out on the whole thing. Which, I mean, he's a really, you know, good writer and good guitar player. It's kind of a shame.
Yeah. But like I said, I think they're still doing it, right? Brian's got the new lineup in the last 3 or 4 years, and they've been touring, have the new album coming out pretty soon, or they have a new album out. I'm not really too sure, but I've been reading about him a lot, so.
Yeah, he's kind of poked his head out now, and he's seen him a little bit more than, I mean, for a long time, he was pretty much off the radar entirely.
Yeah. But he made a comment where he stopped playing a Flying V because everybody else had one. It's like, you don't do things like that. You know, you have to, you know, be thankful that people recognize that you have certain talents instead of, like, you know, shunning things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I want to add to that.
Nope.
I was never. This album was a little before my time. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think you. It was for you. It was the case of the. You liked the early Metallica, and you were doing the. What did these guys come from? And you went back to this one.
But I couldn't find Diamond Head stuff back when Metallica. I couldn't find the first Metallica album when it came out. You know, I kind of jumped in between Kill 'Em All and Ride the Lightning, and Ride the Lightning is probably the first Metallica that I had. And trying to backfill with Kill 'Em All, it was forever to find it. You know, it wasn't easy around here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find out. You know, am I Blitzkrieg and all that stuff from not from Diamond Head, but.
From Blitzkrieg?
Yeah, from Blitzkrieg. And, I mean, just trying to find those other songs they did that I liked, it was impossible. It was only recently that I even found the Blitzkrieg album.
Yeah.
Granted, I haven't looked too hard, but it was just one of those things. This was just about 2 years before my time.
Yeah.
And on the album, again, is they had that, especially in the British press, things go so fast. So when the White Label album came out, I think they got reviewed. But when the actual album came out, people kind of skipped over it.
Yeah.
You know, because it was already old hat. So you didn't get all that glorious, reviews that you should have gotten. I don't think we even reviewed that album. I think because we did all the singles, and John said something about the White Label promo he got. Whatever that was, and then when the actual album came out, it wasn't received really. It was like the fans bought it, but the press wasn't there already. So that might add to the stigma of this album.
Yeah, they kind of missed the first time out of the gate.
Yeah.
No do-overs.
No.
Well, not when it goes so fast. So
they never told them they're not the Beatles. Don't put out a white album.
So, yeah,
none more white.
Cool. Okay.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Thanks, Scott.
Awesome. Thanks, Bill.
Have a good one.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome to the show, Samoth. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. Hey, we wanted to kind of get in touch. You've had quite a bit going on in your career over the last several years and kind of touch base with what's going on, not only with The Wretched End, but with Scum and some of the other projects that you've been involved in. I wanted to kind of back up. You grew up in obviously a musical family. Do you want to talk a little bit about how the influence of having your father being a musician, or was it an impact, or were there other things that kind of spurred you to play music?
I definitely think that was an impact. I mean, my father is a blues bass player, and I guess I grew up with him being he was quite active, playing a lot of shows and being in bands, and sometimes I went with him and seeing him play and stuff, and that definitely inspired me to pick up an instrument to begin with. And actually, the bass was the first instrument I started to play. So when I first started playing with the local bands and stuff, then I actually played bass. But later on, I kind of went into a little bit more extreme path, and I didn't really have a guitar player. So when I first started my first death metal band, then I decided to pick up the guitar myself, basically because there was nobody else wanting to play that kind of music and who played the guitar.
Sure.
So that's actually the how I started to play guitar.
Now, did you find coming from bass to guitar made it a little bit easier as far as being able to do rhythms and things like that? I mean, you kind of got the taking it from a bass player's perspective into a guitar player.
Yeah, I think it was more fun playing guitar. You know, it was more you can crank out the riffs, and it was sort of easier, and it felt more natural to write music as opposed to just playing the bass, which is more like a backbone with a drum.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now, have you ever, with your dad, did you find yourself wanting to emulate, did you listen to a lot of the same kind of music? Like, early on, obviously as you got older, I'm assuming you got into heavier stuff, some of this stuff. But did you listen to a lot of, like, the blues growing up?
So much. I heard whatever was played around the house and stuff. But I quite early on, like, discovered metal music and first rock music, but then as soon as I was introduced to Kiss at a quite early age, then basically I sold my soul to the devil, and it was all about metal from then on.
Sure.
So and that was always my main inspiration growing up. That was classic heavy metal, and I discovered more extremer stuff.
You obviously came out of what was quite a large, very organic movement in Norway in the mid 90s. It seemed like everyone kind of came together all at the same time. Was there something that particularly spurred, for example, Mayhem or Venom, something you guys heard and said, yeah, that's what I want to do, and you all kind of took the ball and ran with it? Or was it more of a gradual, like you maybe heard one band do it and then another band did it, and it kind of trickled through bands? Or
I guess Mayhem had been going for a while, and they were kind of doing their thing, and they were very influenced by Venom and Battery and those Celtic Frost and, those original black metal bands. And and I guess, it first started in Norway, things were a little bit more orientated towards the death metal scene,
Sure.
And then people started to network, and I think more and more people kind of found each other through the underground movement and network, And then there came an interest towards black metal, and I guess it had a lot to do with Mayhem in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because also Euronymous had this shop in Oslo, and it kind of became like a meeting ground for people interested in extreme music and like an extremer lifestyle, sort of. So I think that was sort of like the initial start of it.
Yeah, no. Was back in that era, was death metal quite as prevalent as black metal seems to be? I mean, when you think Norway, you think black metal. I mean, was death metal kind of prevalent at the time? A little mix of them too, or is it?
Well, I guess I started to play in a bunch of like metal bands, like basically classic metal, doing cover songs and stuff, and then when I started to get more interested in writing my own stuff and stuff, then I became more interested in the whole death metal sound, and like influenced by very much like old Sepultura and Morbid Angel and stuff like that, and then a little bit later on I grew more fascinated with the more primal black metal feel, and so I think death metal already introduced in Norway by the time the whole black metal movement kind of grew.
Now, obviously, your career with Emperor has been pretty well documented, but talk a little bit about maybe the decision in the direction that Zyklon went after you left Emperor, or actually, I guess you were still in them kind of simultaneously for a period of time.
Yeah, for a period of time, the idea to start Zyklon came about when it started to become clear that Emperor kind of went towards an end, that we kind of would actually split up that band, and I was quite quick in forming another band, and I definitely wanted to pick up where I left, sort of, and keep working with music and keep touring and releasing albums, so I made that a big priority, and music-wise, I guess you could say that Zyklon took a slightly different direction. It was a little bit more in-your-face extreme at least compared to the latest or the last Emperor album, which was the Prometheus album, which was a very progressive album. So I kind of drew back some of those earlier influences again, and I think the first Cyclone album, World of Worms, actually has quite a bit of a black metal feel to it as well, even though it's mixed in also with more death metal elements. But it's a pretty extreme album, I think. And I guess as Cyclone started to progress as well, and as we find our permanent lineup and stuff, then Cyclone became more of a little bit more traditional death metal sounding, I guess you could say. Even if we still drew in like certain influences from black metal.
Now the your latest project, The Wretched End. How would you kind of contrast The Wretched End to maybe a follower of Cyclone or a fan of Emperor?
I definitely think The Wretched End has a little bit more of a thrash metal vibe to it, and that was sort of the blueprint when I started to write the material for this. It would be more like a death thrash sounding project, but as we kind of got more into the writing process of The Wretched End, we also ended up mixing in elements from black metal as well. So I think it's, if you listen to the album, it's a kind of a varied album. It has kind of goes in a little bit different direction, but the general feel is sort of a death thrash vibe, I think. And compared to Cyclone, it's also a little bit more organic in its performance, I think. Also maybe in production, it has a little bit more death and live feel to it, and it's way more groove orientated. I think maybe Cyclone was a little bit more colder, a little bit more clinical.
Now, did you do all of the songwriting, or did you and Cosmo kind of share the writing duties for the band?
Yeah, we share the writing duties, so we both put a lot of music on the table, and we work really well together on the arrangements and the materials. It's been a really good creative collaboration, I would say. Like, we work well together, and it's been a good run.
Now, you originally, kind of when the band, I think, was kind of first announced, was Cosmo destined to be the singer at that time, or did that just come out of not maybe finding someone else to sing?
Yeah, that kind of came out during the process. I mean, he already sings in another band called Mindgrinder, so I was well aware of his vocal skills, but we were like kind of holding our cards open, and we were like looking around, and we actually auditioned some people as well, but then we decided that he's going to give it a go as well, and that worked really well, I think. So we decided, like, why bring in more people when we can do it yourself?
Yeah, why don't mess with the chemistry? Now, on drums you have Nils. Is this a permanent thing for him, or he kind of came in a little later in the project as well. I mean, is he the full-time drummer, or was he more of the studio work for the band?
Well, basically, this project started as a studio project, and today it's still a studio project. So,
okay.
And we hired him to come in and record the album, but we got along really well, and he did like a really good job. So we're really happy with his work on the album, and I think he enjoyed it quite a bit too. So we really hope to have him on board for the next album, and he seems definitely interested in that. So we'll just see.
Okay.
At that point in time, if it fits, you know, but because he's not Norwegian, he's Swedish, and at the moment he's actually in Australia, as far as I know. So so we'll see at that point. But we definitely, all of us are definitely interested in recording on the same with the same lineup next time.
Doing it again. So, do you want to talk a little bit about
hoping they pull that off?
Talk a little bit about the production on Ominous. Did one of you guys produce it, or was there a external producer involved?
Yeah, sort of co-produced. It's together with the engineer of Strand Studio, which is called and he's called Marius Strand. So we worked with him, and we also recorded some stuff, like the vocals and the bass, actually. We recorded in Cosmo's own studio, and we brought in the files and mixed it all at the Strand Studio. So, I definitely think the producer or engineer, Marius, had an impact on the production. But we also had kind of like a clear vision of what we wanted when we came in, so... And again, it was something that clicked. You know, we kind of worked really well together with this engineer. So I think in general, this whole album, everybody involved have got along really well, and I feel we have like a really relaxed and inspiring and motivating both songwriting process and recording process. So it's been really, really cool. I think that also shines through in the end result. I think it's the album has a good vibe, and the production is good, and yeah, it works.
Actually. And you want to just talk briefly about your production company, Nocturnal Arts Productions. I mean, is that just kind of an independent label, or is there a little more to it?
Yeah, it's a label I started up, I guess, 1993. So I started off as a completely underground label and just saved up some money and printed some 7 inches, and which I like distributed just through the like underground network. You know, this was even before there was email or internet. You know, it's just the old school way. And then I kind of grew a little bit more interested in making it a little bit more serious. So I started to sign a few bands and put some more money and effort into it, you know, and got like a proper distribution network and kind of built up, a decent underground label. And but today, I guess you could say it's more of an imprint label with Candlelight Records. So it's all through their system. So it's all manufactured and distributed through Candlelight Records worldwide. So that's why I also decided to do the Ratchet then through Nocturnal Art. It made sense because I already work with the Candlelight Records, and so it made sense to do it through Nocturnal Art.
Sure. Okay, well, Sam, if I want to thank you for coming on. I guess before we go, the million-dollar question, I think, on a lot of people's mind. Do you foresee Emperor maybe doing any more live shows, or maybe
getting back to you? That is really the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I don't foresee that. There's no plans of us doing anything more together. Like, we did the live reunion shows back in 2006 and 2007, and that was a really great experience for us, and I think that's something we needed to do to kind of end that era, I think, because when the band split up in 2001, we never got to do those final shows, both for ourselves, but also for the fans, of course. So,
sure.
But having done those, I think that that kind of closed that chapter.
Yeah, go out on a
but you never know, though. Right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you absolutely never know. So.
You can still keep it as the million-dollar question for a few more years.
with that Moxie whatever crap. Now I'm out for blood, baby.
Focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
It's killing me, it's killing me, it's killing me, it's killing me. Everything pisses me off. Everything pisses me off. Everything pisses me off. Everything pisses me off.
I'm back. And as usual, I'm pissed. I'm just thinking a lot today about bands and about how bands get screwed over pretty much by everybody. And, you know, a lot of times bands start off, they're young, they're naive. They believe a lot of shit, but they learn fast. You know, and I was thinking back to an article that was written, back in the 90s by Steve Albini, and it was in Maximum Rock and Roll magazine. You know, he had a lot of good things to say. And basically, the name of the article was called What's Wrong with Music? And I thought the first paragraph of what Steve Albini had to say pretty much sums up my feeling. And this is what he said. Whenever I talk to a band who are about to sign with a major label, I always end up thinking of them in a particular context. I imagine a trench about 4 feet wide, 5 feet deep, maybe 60 yards long, filled with runny, decaying shit. I imagine these people, some of them good friends, some of them barely acquaintances, at one end of this trench. I also imagine a faceless industry lackey at the other end, holding a pen and a contract waiting to be signed. Nobody can see what's printed on the contract. It's too far away. And besides, the shit stench is making everybody's eyes water. The lackey shouts to everybody that the first one to swim the trench gets to sign the contract. Everybody dives in the trench, and they struggle furiously to get to the other end. Two people arrive simultaneously and begin wrestling furiously, clawing each other and dunking each other under the shit. Eventually, one of them capitulates, and there's only one contestant left. He reaches for the pen, but the lackey says, actually, I think you need a little more development. Swim again, please. Backstroke. And of course, he does. And you know what? I think Steve got it right when he wrote that. And that was over a decade ago. I think he still has it right. What makes it worse is, as he went on in that article and talked about the cash outlay from the label and the band and what goes on with recording and spending that big advance and all of that. Part of his whole thing predicates on this band dreaming that their merch sales will somehow help them pay back that big advance and they won't be in the hole anymore. And you know what? Now they don't even have that because with 360 deals, they're fucked on their merch too. They've got nothing. They've got no support when they go out to tour. They get no money off of their merch. They're just fucked. So when Steve wonders what's wrong with music, here's another example of what's wrong with music. But I will say, like I do all the time, things are a little bit different here in metal land, at least with some of our really great metal labels, some of them that put those packages of bands together to go out and you as a metalhead get a great deal when you go to see a show. They get some good label support. They get some promotion. And we keep that metal music alive because some of those other music forms, they're dying a quick death. It's probably 5 years from now, you're going to remember all these metal bands, but all that shit they play on the radio right now, people are going to wonder, who are they talking about? They'll be long gone. And they'll owe the labels a shitload of money. So metalheads, go to those shows. Support those bands. That's how they make their money. They love playing live, and they love playing live for you. So you need to get your asses out there and let them know it. And even though most of those bands don't make a lot of money on the CDs, you got to go out and buy those CDs too. They make a little bit there, but more than that, it tells the label that this band should make another album, get another tour, and they're out there playing for you. So you need to do it. You need to keep our music alive.
let the Bieber and all that shit just die a horrible death. And when it's all over, remember that all of us, the metalheads, the headbangers, will be the ones left standing. We did it before, and we're doing it again. Metal's coming back strong, and it's because of folks like you. And that is nothing to be pissed off at. But the rest of it, the big boys that ran away from metal when the next flavor of the day like grunge came around and they just dropped all those guys like they were shit. Yeah, I'm pissed at them because they fucked us once and I don't want us to get fucked again. This is Scott Thompson saying, metalheads, remember, it's better to be pissed off than be pissed on. A big horns up to the waiting metal masses. This is Scott Thompson with yet another edition of Metal Releases. And we've got quite a few to go through today, so let's dig right in. On November 26th, as many of you may have known, Nuclear Blast in Europe did roll out Doro in 25 Years in Rock in a whole bunch of different formats. So if you haven't got that one yet, pick that up. Also from Nuclear Blast in Europe, on the 3rd of December is Gotthard with Heaven Best of Ballads Part 2. A ridiculously long title there, but there it is. And looking way forward for Nuclear Blast, on the 14th of January, Belphegor with Blood Magic Necromance. So a couple of good hits there. Okay, let's kind of move right on here. Lots of stuff going on December 7th from Metal Mind Productions. Tank with War Machine, which is their first studio album since 2002's Still at War. So if you liked Tank in the past, they're still rolling along. And as they say, they're still in action. So go pick that one up. Also from Metal Mind Productions on the 7th is The Duskfall with Frailty and Source. It's a 2-CD reissue of their first two discs. So if you like a bit of melodic death metal, you might want to grab that one. That one is only limited to 2,000 copies. Also on December 7th, Malevolent Creation with Australian Onslaught. That's 13 live tracks, and there'll be a DVD coming for that soon. But if you can't wait for the DVD and you want some live Malevolent Creation, go pick that one up. Also from Regain, Grave and Burial Ground. So yes, once again, those early Swedish death metal pioneers are back with another new release, and also a whole bunch of their previous catalog is also being reissued. So if you want to get some Grave, now's the time to do it. Also from Regain on December 7th, Enthroned with Pentagrammaton. So a little black metal there from Regain for all of you. Just a few other hits to talk about. On the 30th of November, the Blizzard of Oz Diary of a Madman Tour 1982 DVD is coming out. If you're a big fan of the original Blizzard of Oz, go grab that one. Another DVD to pick up on December 7th is Dio the Legend Live, which is a video of a concert in Tokyo from 1985. And just one other hit is if you're into gothic metal, and Sotica when their debut album Rise, and that one is also coming up next week. That's a wrap. Enjoy.
Okay, well, that's terrific.
Concert announcements.
Recently announced tours. Both the Vans Warped Tour and the Rockstar Mayhem Festival have announced their venues and dates for 2011. And both are offering you holiday pre-sale ticket packages. For the Rockstar Mayhem Festival, $45 will get you lawn tickets, a collectible Christmas ornament that also allows you early entrance into the festival, and a beanie. And the $85 package gets you a pit ticket, the early festival entrance ornament, and a beanie. The Rockstar Mayhem Festival will announce their bands on January 28th. And as usual, they will also be doing in April a pre-sale limited edition pit and general admission tickets if you miss out on this holiday pre-sale. The Band's Warp Tour package is $45 for general admission. You also get that collectible ornament and some tube socks. They will announce their bands from December 8th through March 26th, with the headlining bands being announced March 26th. Except we'll be touring North America with Sabaton April 9th through May 7th. And since there's no Winnipeg dates, Dario's going to have to come down to Salt Lake. Who else wants to show up to the show? Well, Dario and Winnipeg don't always lose out, though. December 4th, the infamous Odorous Urungus and Beefcake the Mighty will be in store at CD Plus on Ness Avenue in Winnipeg. Two lucky fans will also win tickets to that night's show. But come on, people. I hope you've already got your tickets. Dario does. Plus, he got a little backstage action and a photo pass. And we all expect photos of Dario and the Cuttlefish. Skindred will be touring the UK April 26th through May 7th. And Saxon, Wolfsbane, and Fury UK will be also touring the UK April 9th through the 23rd. And if those two tours aren't enough to lift your winter spirits, there's even more. The Devin Townsend Project will also be hitting the UK in March. They've got six dates from March 3rd through March 6th, and there is a European tour currently in the works. Epica, Disbelief, and Metal Inquisitor are joining the ranks of the Rock Hard Festival in Germany, playing along with Overkill, Trypticon, Enslaved, and a lot more. Festival is scheduled June 10th through the 12th. Malevolent Creation will be touring Europe this April, with dates running April 2nd through April 27th. And there's even more UK dates in the spring. Rush will be headed over to Europe this spring. They'll be playing May 4th through May 29th on their Time Machine Tour, which is a 3.5-hour show playing both old and new music. And they'll be playing the Moving Pictures album in its entirety, which will be a first for them in the UK.
Hey, it's everyone's favorite, Metal Birthdays. We missed that last week. Well, we didn't miss it. If, you know, if you're a friend of ours on Facebook, you probably caught it. But that's the only place where you can still catch that. Because we did have to cut it out of our Cannibal Corpse episode.
It almost became its own show.
That was its own freaking half an hour episode. Let's keep it shorter this time, please.
That will not be hard this time.
Yeah, I think we had pretty boring people this week, didn't we? We'll make them more interesting than they really are. Who do you have to start with? See, it's that boring. We don't even know.
How should we do it? Numerical? By who? Should we go by the oldest? Should we go by the first date?
You know what? Let's go from the oldest, maybe. Who's the old fart list? You know, there's at least one dude here on my list who's, like, older than my parents. And that's fucking old.
I think it's this guy.
Yeah,
Roger
Glover. Roger
Glover.
The bassist of Deep Purple.
And he was in Rainbow for 5 years.
all. He was in a whole bunch, I think, at some point. He was producing records as well in the late 70s. You know, he did a Judas Priest album, Sin After Sin. Did a whole bunch of other stuff as well. You know that...
I've got a question for you. How old is he?
Well, he's... I think his birthday's on... Is it on the 30th? I think it's on the 30th.
Yeah, he's born at 45.
Yeah, so he's technically retiring on the day we air this show on Pew Rock Radio. So if you're catching it on Pew Rock, Roger Glover is retiring. Not.
Wait.
He's going to be 65.
I was like, what? He's retiring?
You know the most famous, probably the most famous song by Deep Purple is Smoke on the Water, right? Do you know that?
Yeah.
You know that there's a Guinness Book of World Records held for that song, for the most guitarists playing the main riff, dun, 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 you know that one, at the same time. Yeah. That's like every fucking musician ever starting up starts off with that fucking riff. Yeah, it's a record. It started off like I think in 94 in BC in Canada, in Vancouver, BC in Canada. There was 1300 guitarists played that same riff at the same time. Well, that record's been broken a couple times. It actually belongs to it was done in, the last time it was on May 3rd, 2009 last year in Wrocław, Poland, where 6,346 guitar players joined the current guitar player for Deep Purple, Steve Morse, and they performed that song during the Jimi Hendrix Festival. 6,003. Can you believe that? Can you imagine that?
That's insanity.
That's crazy. It's fucking crazy. I don't know if they were all plugged in, but I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have to be. It'd be fucking insanely loud. Crazy. Who else do we have? Who else is old and ancient and famous? I think we've got another famous guy. The
Ozman.
Ozman, yeah, Ozzy. Ozzy, he's a little...
Celebrates his birthday on December 3rd.
He's 60-something, but I don't know, 62, 3? So he's a little younger than Roger.
You asking me to do math? I'm going to say 62.
Okay, I think he was born in 68, if I remember correctly. Anything interesting 48? On Ozzy? In 48? Yeah, so he's 62.
Yeah.
Where do you go with Ozzy? Yeah, like, well, fuck, you can't talk about the bat anymore. That's fucking lame. Now, how about the fact that he started his first job after he quit school? I think he was 15 when he left school. He was a construction site laborer. He was a trainee plumber, an apprentice toolmaker, and a car factory horn tuner.
Oh, what? I want to be a horn tuner.
I've got a special job for
you. Did you make that shit up?
No, that's a pretty impressive resume before he started singing for blacks. Oh, he was a slaughterhouse worker as well. Fucking guy was busy, man. That's between 15 and I don't know, what, he was 19 when he started in Sabbath or something? 20 or something? Anyway, Ozzy's got
know.
A pretty impressive, yeah. He fucking factory horn tuner. Didn't even know that existed.
That is insanity.
I know.
And I didn't know. I. That's fucking awesome.
I know. So who else is old but not quite as old? We're going back in age here. Oh, fuck, I'm asking both of us to do math.
Oh. Tim Roth was my next guy. Tim Roth of Into Eternity.
Oh, wow, he's a young
vocalist. He's the high vocalist.
Oh, he's high.
Not the growler. Yeah, you know
what? What do you got on him? I have nothing.
I actually love Into Eternity. Nothing.
Okay, so he does write some pretty sweet fucking
lyrics.
Does? Never paid attention, yeah. I have to say.
I like Into Eternity. I know that sounds crazy.
I didn't know you did.
Considering what I normally like. Yeah. They're good stuff.
That surprises me. But good on you.
I'm sure it surprises a lot of people.
I think so.
Guilty pleasure.
Guilty pleasure of this episode number one. Chris Poland, do you remember him?
Was he in Megadeth for like 1 year?
Few years, I think. Was he the original guitar player besides Dave? I don't even remember. He's turning 53. I remember seeing Chris Poland, not with Megadeth, but I believe it was with his band Damn the Machine. They were opening for Voivod here in 94, if I remember correctly. Chris got kicked out of do I need to say that? Chris got booted out of Megadeth. Whoa, the first one to get the boot. I think he got booted for stealing guitars from Dave.
No way.
Yeah, I think he was. I'm sure it was Dave who was fucking doing it in his sleep, fucking pawning guitars for his, you know, drug habit. But he was blaming. He even wrote a song. Remember the song Liar? It was about Chris Poland.
Yes. Yeah. I love that song.
So do I. And that was direct hit at Chris Poland. And then he fucking calls him back.
No.
Remember System?
That's
System
not about the PMRC?
Liar? No.
Oh, no, it's not. No. That was Hook and Mouth. Same album, though.
Yeah, Hook and Mouth. Yeah, that was So Far So Good. And then he returned for System Has Failed to do some lead guitar parts, which was kind of surprising. But
not, like, with the band permanently, right? Just, like, he was just a contributor?
Yeah, I think he just did some, did some parts for that album in 2002, I believe. Who else do you have?
Yeah, I've got the amazing Faxter, Jeremy DePoister.
Oh, Jeremy Gay Poster! He also does clean vocals, doesn't he? For some friggin' metalcore.
Oh, he does. He's not just metalcore either. He's metalcore for God.
But how can you be...
The devil wears black, but... Jeremy wears pink panties.
Who says you can't wear pink panties for God?
I'm sure Jesus doesn't mind.
He doesn't care.
He will be turning 21, though.
Oh, my goodness.
You think he's going to celebrate with a real drink?
Nah.
Or is he going to get himself a Diet Coke with a twist of lime?
He's going to steal some wine out of the priest's closet.
That's all I've got. Do you got anybody fun?
I have I don't know how to pronounce the name, but Nicholas Kvartfarf from Shining. An awesome black metal, depressive doom black metal band, I guess. That guy is crazy. I'm sure you've seen some of his interviews. That guy's whacked. He drinks his own urine on stage. Fucking gets physically assaulted by fans. He fucking assaults fans himself. He cuts himself up. He wants his fans to commit suicide. The guy's weird. This is one person I would never. I totally admire the music. I think you like Shining as well. They're pretty awesome.
I don't think I've heard them.
Oh,
but
yes, you
I am
have.
Intrigued.
Yeah.
At this moment, I am intrigued.
Oh, well, if you like Bethlehem, and I know you like. Some other depressive black metal. I'm trying to think of a fucking name.
Yeah, I love the depressive stuff.
Yeah. You would... I think I even introduced you to this band, and I know you liked it, but it's probably been a while. They're working... Well, their new album is recorded. We're just waiting for release soon. Yeah, the guy's totally nuts. I would not ever want to talk to him at all. He's fucked up.
So, do you think he's for real, or do you think he's full of shit?
I think he wants everyone to think he's for real. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to talk more about this guy. There's some stuff, some stuff about him. He's
a fucking racist on my own.
He's a racist homophobe, and he believes in some Nazi movement as well. And I this is where I draw the line. I just want him to drink urine on stage and cut himself up. I don't give a fuck what else, and produce good music. And the last, I have Richard Sharon or Charon from the drummer from Exciter. He's turning 43. And I think at one point.
I miss him.
Oh, Exciter has a new album that just came out. That's kind of when I thought, oh, you know what? Let's mention Ricky here. Yeah, I think he.
Yeah.
He went on to replace Dan Beeler on drums. And, you know, we talked about drummers who sang. Well, Dan Beeler yeah. was a drummer who sang in Exciter in the early days of the band. He's no longer with the band and no longer is the drummer a singer in the band. But anyway,
does he still drum and sing?
Not for Exciter, as far as I know, but he may. It's a fucking tough thing to do, if you ask me.
Oh,
that's it
yeah.
for the birthday people, and we've got a song for them. Do you know the band, the Swedish death? Well, actually, fuck, not Swedish. Fuck, when I think of melodic death, mellow death, I always think Sweden for some stupid reason, but they're from Finland. Amorphis.
Oh,
they,
yes.
They just put out a new album. It's fresh. It's an album of early song. It's called Magic and Mayhem, Tales from the Early Years, and it's just basically all their old songs remixed, remastered. Well, actually, re-recorded from scratch. The song we're going to play is called Black Winter Day.
That's a pretty badass cover they've got on the new album. Have you had a look at it?
Oh, yeah, the fish jumping out of water. Oh, fuck, that's so cool. I don't think I've ever seen a fish on the cover of an album, of a metal album.
I don't think I have either. It's a first.
Not unless it was
and
like
if it's
a
not,
piranhas.
Somebody
or
better
something.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Listening to a sample from the latest album from Amorphis.
Yes, Amorphis on tour, I believe, in the mid to late December in Finland. So if you get a chance to catch them, please do. It is a pretty good band, and these, I guess hardcore fans don't really like. This seems to be a trend of late where bands just go into studio and re-record some of the older material of theirs. Are you opposed to that? Do you like the idea? What are your thoughts?
You know, it's a difficult thing. If they're going to be you know, putting a new spin on it, adding something new, something different, a new flavor to it, you know. Or like, for example, Arch Enemy using their new singer.
Yeah.
You gotta have Angela those. Instead of their past singer. I'm okay with that.
And Exodus did the same thing.
It does
kind
of feel like it's a. I think they did.
Yeah, well, Exodus did the same thing with Bonded by Blood, and they re-recorded that with Rob Dukes last year, I believe. So, yeah, you gotta have something new to bring to the table. Like, 25 years is probably reason enough to do it, to redo an album. And if you can find people to do it, as long as it's not a cash grab.
But in Exodus' case, some of them that feel like a cash grab, like they are just looking for more money, just looking to put something out or to, settle their contract. And in that case, I'm really not going to be running out to buy it.
No, but I'm really, really surprised. Really surprised that some of the bigger acts, some bigger bands like Metallica hasn't done that with Kill 'Em All or something. I mean, this would be a fucking abomination, I think, to have them redo such an enthusiastic album that thing was. But I'm really surprised, and I think this is the only reason. Pardon?
Maybe they've gotten some damn good advice telling them not to do that.
Well, I think I'm pretty sure with Lars being the businessman that he is, that he must have had that idea, and people just ill-advised him. But some of the decisions he's made, anyway, I'm not going to go into.
You know, it would. I think it would piss me off. Well, I guess it depends on how they do it. It has potential to really piss me off. But they're, you know, if they can add something different
and do it
metal, don't fuck it up, don't turn it into this old man.
No, exactly.
Song. You know, don't ruin it for me.
If they were to redo that, or maybe even, I'm not even talking Metallica, but maybe Slayer, maybe Megadeth's first album, because Megadeth's first album really suffered from poor production values. So those are the types of albums. Those are the types of albums that they almost scream for a redo. And in Dave's case, I almost wouldn't mind if he did that, just because I would love to hear modern production of Megadeth's first album. I think that'd be pretty cool. And yeah, it would be done for the money, but I think it'd also be a very fucking interesting, very interesting how, this is how it could have been done if the album was released now. Mind you, Dave's almost 50 years old.
I would like to hear that one, too.
I would like to hear that. But in Metallica's case, they would have to give me something insane, like, put fucking Kerry King on there or something like that. just do a... this is what I would like. I would like the big four coming up with re-recorded album of four of those bands all together, mix-up of different band members doing songs from Metallica, from Anthrax, from Megadeth, from Slayer. Just give me something totally. That would be I would line up to buy that, seriously.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Or it has potential to be awesome. I'm a bit of a pessimist.
I think it has a potential. And now that they've heard me say that, they're going to go for it. And I want the credit. I want at least Focus on Metal be mentioned on that fucking note somewhere inside. On the liner notes.
25% cut.
Hey, 1% was Settle Me for Life. You know what? Next week, we're back. You and I are doing our Extreme Pair episode. And that is going to be one you do not want to miss. That is going to be our guide to black metal. Black metal as a subgenre of metal has really developed itself and branched itself out in all different directions, and a lot of people just diss it for it's just a lot of fans who are not fans of black metal really shuffle that off to the side and say, well, this is the dark side of metal, it sounds the same, it's all one style of shrieking vocals and same pace drums and the same tremolo picking guitars and all that shit. I think we have a lot to prove to those naysayers. There's a lot of styles of black metal. I'm a fan, not as big as you are, and I think you're going to give us a lot of insight. And we're going to play a lot of samples of different styles of black metal. There's tons of shit out there, man. And we're going to play some indie metal as well. We're going to have a couple of surprises in terms of interviews. You definitely want to tune into that. Whether you're a fan of black metal or not, you're going to learn something.
And you may even find a style of it that you actually like.
Yes.
Because it is so varied.
I'm so with you. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it deserves, almost two episodes, but we're going to...
We'll talk
really
fast.
Have to talk fast. And then those of you who enjoy playing back, on your iPod in double speed are really going to get a treat out of that one. I don't know. Do people do that? Do you do that? Do you play episodes? I know people do.
Yes. I totally do.
You do that? Holy shit.
Yeah.
I tried. It's like...
There are some parts that you just don't want to hear, but you want to hear it, but you don't want to be listening.
But you don't do that, if the music comes on, because then it's fucking retarded. Do you?
But you just hit the button again and it goes back to normal.
I know.
There are some people... There are some people I've listened to that I've put them on fast forward.
Oh, yeah.
And they're still talking really slow.
Well, if you guys let us know how you enjoy the show, maybe you do play in half speed. Who knows? Maybe you need to slow us down.
Oh, I might sound creepy, slowed down.
I have to check it out. I've never done that myself. I know there's capabilities. So, next week, you know what to expect next week, and that'll be our episode number 13, won't it? Holy shit, I never even thought about that.
Yes.
Wow, cool.
One of my favorite numbers.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, guys, you if you have any suggestions for our black metal episode, you can call us, 205-383-3666. Perfect for that black metal episode.
So there's lots of other ways you can contact us. You can reach us at shout@focusonmetal.net. You can also get us on Facebook. We have a Focus on Metal page, and then the co-hosts all have their own pages as well. Send us posts, send us funny stories, bands you want us to check out.
If you're an old schooler, we're definitely on MySpace as well. We do have a YouTube channel, and we do have a blog. And, hey, you didn't hear this from me, but on the right side of the blog, there's some ads. If you click on that, we might get paid. But you didn't hear that from me.
Help us out a little bit. Get some extra bandwidth.
Yeah. You can also really, really help us out by going into iTunes or wherever you happen to, get the content. Hopefully subscribe to us and leave us a, positive feedback, maybe a star rating if you can. It really helps us out. I know at the beginning we've been really screaming out for that and it worked. And it kind of stalled. So if you guys want to, especially in different countries, I think as soon as we hit five star reviews, our ratings go up, which, means that we work that much harder to keep you coming back.
The other thing that helps us out a lot is if you let your friends know, your friends who like metal, share us with your friends.
Yeah, if you happen to be on Facebook, and I know a lot of you are, why don't you say, hey, check out Focus on Metal, and especially if you have a ton of friends. The more exposure we get, the better for all of us. So, thanks for tuning in. You guys know what's happening next week. And this week's show is just about to wrap up. I think we're done. I think it's time to head and have some
fun.
Stick
a fork in ya?
Yeah, I think I'm done. Stick a fork in me. Just don't try to fork me. All right, guys. For Scott, for Julian, I'm Dario Psycho.
Mandy De La Muerte.
Don't fork around with us and stay... Focus on Metal. You've been listening to Focus on Metal.
Keep up to date on all things metal. Check us out at focusonmetal.net.
You can subscribe to us on a variety of podcast directories.
Our blog is updated several times a day. focusonmetal.blogspot.com.
You can give us a shout at shout@focusonmetal.net.
You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and MySpace by searching for Focus on Metal. You can also find all the latest album reviews posted up on YouTube.
If you like what you hear on this show, please tell all your friends. Leave a review on iTunes to let others find us. If you don't like us, let us know. And don't forget, our show comes with a 100% money-back guarantee.
You got something to say? We love to hear from you. It's shout@focusonmetal.net.